Konnichiwa mina, potoraku fudotaku. Yokoso kore wa watashi no yuzi no Filipporo-san. Irashai mase, arigato gozaimasu.
Ohayou gozaimasu, tomodachi-san.
Okay, I think they'll never allow me to go back to that place, to that country after this intro.
What's my best? How are you, man?
Good, man. Good.
Just returned
from after 25 days in Japan. So it was for sure the trip of my life, no questions. It was incredible, man.
Was it everything you expected it to be?
I mean, yes, I could say so. Like there were some things that I really wanted to do. Like, for example, going to like a super nice sushi omakase. So I had the opportunity to go to two different ones. And I really got, you know, on the sushi episode when I was talking about the seasoning and I said, what's the name of this dressing? And you were like, dude, you know, like you were like super offended of me calling it a dressing. And I really got like why you were feeling like that. Like you go to like a real omakase place. I would describe it as a religious experience. Like it has this whole ritualistic thing around it. Everybody is super quiet and respectful. Just by coincidence, I happened to go to both experiences with Karen. You know, like the first one, it was the only one that I managed to book, because also something that I learned from this trip, and if you're planning to go to Japan in March, I don't know if you know this, because I know you were a broke-ass student when you were there the last time, but you should start making bookings right now, like 3 months advance. Like that's like the timing. For the really good places, you need like that kind of buffer timing. So I just managed to find one sushi place that I was like, okay, like it was easy to book through the normal online platforms. And when I arrived there, which was, by the way, difficult to find, I got lost. Fortunately enough, I had enough. I wanted to arrive early. So at the end, I ended up running. In the middle of Shibuya, like, oh, I'm going to be late, you know, like, and it was this normal apartment. I went to a fourth floor. I opened the door. I sit down. And then suddenly, hey, Eric, you know this place too?
Really,
like that. And wow. He had brought me like through Instagram. He brought me because we were having lunch the next day, also in a sushi place. And he wrote me, okay, see you soon. 5 minutes later. And going with Gavin was really... He knows so much about, first of all, the language. He understands everything, or at least enough of what the chef is explaining, but also about the fishes, the different ways that they're processed and everything. And he was explaining me everything. So that was like a real plus, being with Kevin in both
places. Being with Kevin, that's just excellent company, you know, especially in this sort of setting.
Because the first one, they spoke English, they were explaining the dishes in English and everything, which is relatively uncommon. The second one, no English at all. And so in the middle of the experience, the chef would stop and he would start talking. And then Kevin would say, he's asking if somebody wants like an extra nigiri of the ones we already had and blah, blah, blah. And then somebody came and he ordered, you know, like I was like, dude, I'll have what you have. Like, you know, like, don't let me complicate things, you know, like, I'll be fine. And yeah, that was one of the highlights for, of course, going to both of these places. And the second one was like, the first one was one specialized on aged fish. So the guy would, every year he would say the aging of each piece, like, this is tuna, 14 days. This is 7 days. This is blah, 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 3 days. Everything was aged. A disciple of Sugita-san, which is one of the top sushi chefs in Japan. For me, that was the best sushi I've ever had and the best sushi experience I've ever had. But it's funny because both talking with Kevin and also with Santiago from MAS, Santiago Fernandez, who is now a 2 Michelin star chef in Tokyo, I was chatting with him and both told me like, okay, this is from the mid-level is one of the best. But this is still mid-level. There is a level above that, which is top level. And there is a difference between both things. You know, like for me, it was also okay to, you know, to have mid-level. Maybe next time I go to Japan, I manage to get to maybe Saito or Sugita. I know those places are insanely difficult to book. You have to book like 1 year in advance, something like that.
Yeah, Saito. No, Saito, you can't actually book anymore. You used to be able to book like a year in advance. Now it's by invitation only.
Yeah, these places are really difficult to get. Like, but if you know someone that knows someone, you know, there's always a way. But I mean, I'll try to get, at least try, you know, like to go one of the top names next time I go. I also got like a super nice recommendation list from Noma, since we went to Noma to interview Cristina Mejias from Noma Projects. And she gave us a recommendation list they have. And there were some other sushi places that are not Saito or Sugita, but are also like top places that are not as insanely impossible to get. Because there's a Sugita, incredibly difficult to book. Saito, incredibly difficult.
That's really funny.
And yeah, what else? I did 3 cities, maybe 4. But apart from that, like 3 extra cities, like one day trips. So a total like 7-8 cities. You're also planning to go, you plan to do Tokyo and Kyoto, right?
Yes. So I'm also finalizing planning to go. I'm like about to book flights and I'm going to go end of March.
Okay.
Hopefully catching a little bit of the cherry blossom season. And yeah, my plan is to go with my mother.
Okay.
I'm doing a mother-son trip because we were talking about it. And she always wanted to go, but she would never, ever go by herself, right? So last time I saw her, I was like, you know what? Let's just go together. Like, fuck it. Let's just go. And we're planning to go to Tokyo, of course, because arriving and leaving from Tokyo is the most convenient. But then definitely going to Kyoto for the most time, maybe a little bit of Osaka. And she actually asked me yesterday, she was like, hey, I really want to go to the countryside. So, which is a little bit more difficult to plan. And I'm not quite like, even though it's been a very long time since I lived in Japan, but like I can go to Tokyo and I can fill 2-3 weeks with stuff to do easy. Sure. a lot of restaurants, a lot of activities. Kyoto, the same, right? But like planning a trip to the countryside, I'll have to research it a little bit better and try to get into it a little bit more. A lot of people say it's like 2 different experiences, right? I mean, like, first of all, going to Tokyo and going to Kyoto is 2 different experiences. It's Tokyo, it's its own thing.
Completely different experience, yeah. Absolutely. Like, yeah, like Tokyo is like a metropolis, you know, you could compare it to Paris or New York. That's why also even you and some other people told me, because I was with this mentality of I want to have only ultra Japanese food from Japan. And they told me, if that's your mentality in Tokyo, you're not going to have like the full Tokyo experience, because you can have the best pizza in the world. You can have the best French restaurants in the world. Like the best Chinese restaurants in the world are in Tokyo. So like that's something you should also experience while in the city. And so I did. I took the advice. Also, the best croissants, like, you know, like it's really worth exploring all these cuisines with the Tokyo infused, you know, because it's not an Italian pizza. It's a Tokyo pizza, you know.
Like, yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
While Kyoto is super traditional, I would say Kyoto is super worth visiting museums to watch like old Japanese art, pottery shops all over the place. I would say it's also the most touristic. And if you're going during cherry blossom, I mean, like I was so happy and so thankful that some of the days that I was traveling, it was really low season. I would go to these super touristy places and they were empty. And I was like, wow, I'm so lucky. And also like the summer was really delayed, probably due to global warming. So I was expecting a winter, it was still autumn with the beautiful yellow and orange leaves of the maple, Japanese maple trees.
Amazing.
So I went to Arashiyama, this forest in Kyoto. I really recommend you to go there to visit. There are like 3 things, like one temple, one garden that used to be the garden of a movie star, but it's beautiful. And also this mirror museum. I recommend you to visit those 3 things. And also what we did, we booked in the temple. They have this Buddhist vegetarian restaurant that is in the Michelin guide, and it costs like 40 euros, like lunch. And it's like a long menu. One of the highlights, like doing the whole thing that day, like going really early to the forest, the bamboo forest, the 3 gardens, the temple, and having lunch there. super nice. And also visiting, there's also a museum just next to that forest. That was my favorite museum with super old Japanese ink drawings. Beautiful.
Amazing. Yeah, that's exactly the sort of stuff that's, yeah, this kind of like delving in and just kind of like bathing in like the surroundings, you know? You're just kind of like putting yourself in, you're floating along and you're just really soaking it in. It was the same when I was, I had a similar experience like when I was in Hong Kong. And Hong Kong is like super, super bustling, right? Hong Kong is a very cool city. There's a monastery on a neighboring island called Lantau. It was a similar experience because it's like quite touristic. It's a Buddhist monastery. It's very cool because either you hike up the mountain of this island or you take like a cable car. And of course, it's like there's like, you know, shops and stuff like that to finance the monastery. But when I arrived there, first of all, it was like really cool scenery. They have this massive, huge Buddha statue on the top of the mountain that like people like make a pilgrim sort of like up to, you know. But when I arrived, they were about to close the monastery for visitors. And you walk inside into the courtyard and there's these like big basins of ash with these huge incense burners. Huge incense sticks. And you walk inside and you're not allowed to film in there. And there was a door like a little bit open to like one of the inside chambers where you could see all the like ceilings like with gold paintings. And the monks were in there having evening prayer. So they were just like walking in a circle, chanting the prayer. And man, it was so magical. Like so, so, so magical. I actually, to my shame, I sneaked a little video just like off the corner. And sometimes I still watch it because it's sort of like you can see the like carved dragon of the like of the roof, you know, like underneath the roof painted with like the mountains in the background. And you can hear this like quiet prayer chant. It was so beautiful. And it was like exactly, it just reminded me of that when you say, because you just like go somewhere and you like dissolve into the experience. Yeah.
Like I had a few day trips. For example, I went to this lake that is near Mount Fuji. You know, like I can't think of a mountain more iconic than Mount Fuji, like at least visually, because you can say Everest, okay, whatever, but visually it's not like it doesn't have like a specific iconic image, you know?
Excuse me, what about the Matterhorn?
Never heard of it.
Ooh, okay. Okay.
What is it? In the Canary Islands.
The Matterhorn?
Yeah, I know more Mount Teide, maybe that one.
Mount Teide, yes. Also, yeah. It's the Fuji of Europe.
But anyways, like I saw Mount Fuji already like a couple of times in the Shinkansen, in the bullet train. And I was like, wow, like this is so impactful. Like I want to go near. And so I took like a day trip from Tokyo to a lake. And that was also like countryside, you know, like walking in the there was enough. I also went to a Shintoist temple that has this insanely huge trees, like, and there was like this cult of the trees that there were two of them were married and you know, like bound with a lace and whatever. And so that was also really going into a forest, taking a walk on the countryside, having like this traditional food from the countryside, hotto, which was like a noodle soup from there. So it's relatively easy to have like these day trips also from Kyoto. You can go to Nara, which is a day trip, and you're near the deers and these kind of things. Also from Nagoya, we did that was also one of the highlights. Like our friend Yuwa Oki from Matcha Magazine organized us a tour, a fermentation tour in the Chita Peninsula. So, and we visited breweries of soy sauce, miso, mirin, and sake. To a traditional Japanese restaurant there in the countryside, beautiful. And for example, for me being in this soy sauce brewery, they were doing something I was really curious about all my life because I've never seen it, white soy sauce, white tamari, right? Which is actually, it's not correct to call it soy sauce because it's mostly wheat. That's why it's not so dark. Incredibly delicious. It's kind of like a soy sauce, but you find the hints of this kind of like nice sourdough bread thing in the flavor and the aromas. So we had that for lunch. We had a sashimi and I see this light soy sauce I put, and I was like, wow, for me that was one of the bites of the trip. like, wow, incredible. And just after that, we go to the brewery where they're actually making it, and they allowed us to try like the first, like in a cider house here in the Basque Country. They opened the fucking barrel of the soy sauce, and the first thing that came out, we tried that. It was incredible, man. Incredible.
Did you shout, "Chotch"?
I wanted to. No. When they did that, I was traveling with Bernie, this Canadian friend, and she was like, "Oh no, we're not worthy to get this." It was so over the top.
Ow.
And then I asked my cousin Walter San in Ibiza, like, "Hey, do you know about this sauce?" And she was like, "Yeah, I have it."
Nice. Of course he does.
So that fermentation tour was beautiful. Like also going to this super small sake breweries, to the oldest medium brewery in Japan, also to a dark miso brewery. Also there's a castle in Nagoya. That was like a whole day in a van traveling around.
Amazing. Did you, I'm curious, you talked about your sushi experience, because I know when I was in Japan, I was like, okay, sushi for sure. And I that's why I also know exactly what you mean when you say this, like, oh, this like high mid-range sushi, you know?
Yeah, because like at this level, I would say a low level is like a normal restaurant, like everybody knows it's a restaurant. But
it's already like very good. Like that's the thing, you know?
Yeah. But at mid-level it's something else, you know. It's really like the chef is like a master of ceremony. It has like this priesty kind of quality to it. Like when he walks into the bar, it has like a strong presence.
100%.
And he will start like giving these nigiris one by one in order, and everything is so ritualistic, so ceremonial. You know, like for example. And the first one where this sushi chef talking English and everything, I was shooting and everything was okay. And the second one, Kevin told me like, don't shoot here.
Yeah.
So I did anyway, but really sneaky, right? Like, no, not with my camera in front, like, hey, look. But I wanted to get some shots of that place. But I realized that every time, for example, when Misha, hopeful, went to Japan, I saw he posted like a short video in a place like this, like in a top sushi place. And it was really sneaky, you know. It was not like you would feel that he was not putting the camera like a tourist, you know.
Yeah, 100%. There's a like a big no phone, no film policy in a lot of places. Yeah. But what I'm curious about is like, did you have any other food related experiences where you had a little bit like your mind blown? Like for example, for me I had two very distinctive ones. Is when I went to a yakitori place. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, I did not know. I was like, oh, yeah, cool. Let's go eat yakitori a little bit. Chicken on a stick. Yeah, cool, easy. And then I went to an actual one and I was like, what the fuck? And I had it with tempura also. Right before I left, I was like, okay, tempura is tasty. And then I went to a real tempura place and I was like, holy shit.
I went to a super good yakitori place in Osaka. You know, also has this quality of, you would say, like, you know, this guy is the grill master. And it reminded me a lot of a DJ, you know, like fine tuning all the time, like tweaking a little bit, you know, everything. He was like, his eyes are all the time on the grill and he's just tweaking, adjusting, equalizing with a scissor, cutting out if there's a piece that is too burnt, you know, just making everything perfect. And then you get this grill. Like, also what I love is that they do like nose to tail and they start telling you, okay, this is the neck of the chicken. These are the gizzards. This is the butt. This is the that. And everything is just grilled to perfection. You know, like maybe a little bit raw in the, just in the very core, you know, like.
No, absolutely. And for me, like what I noticed is that everything was piping hot, right? And so my time in Japan really made me like realize how important temperature is in food. With like broths, you know, like dashi, etc. You know, you go to really good ramen restaurants and the broth is piping hot because it's different. Sipping a soup that's piping hot and you can almost not drink it. And you kind of, you ease up to it. If you drink a little bit, it's like, oh God, you feel it in your whole body. You keep drinking, you eat the noodles. And it was the same with a yakitori. Like it was like something straight from the grill, not somebody took it from the grill, took it off. Put it on a cutting board, cut it, put it on a plate. The waiter takes 2 minutes to get there and then you get it. It's still hot. That's not the same. right? It's like full of life, full of energy, full of momentum.
Yeah, absolutely. No, there were way too many things that impressed me. Well, also like a super crazy experience we booked, which by the way is a new micro genre of Japanese cuisine that I didn't knew, kushikatsu, which is original from Osaka, which are those, I would describe them like nuggets on a stick of different things, like fried, pan fried things. And then you have like this stick that, and it could be whatever. It could be vegetables, meats, fish, whatever. So we booked at this place called Oshiage 010 in Osaka, which was amazing. And the thing about Osaka is that you have all these buildings that they feel like malls, you know, like or buildings that have like, I don't know, six stores. And in each store, there are like two top restaurants or bars. So and it's the whole street full of that. So you have hundreds of restaurants in a street. It's super overwhelming. And many of these are top places. So we were there. We had some waiting time, like half an hour. Well, let's just do a cocktail, like whatever it's near. So I looked up on something. You should also, something they taught me is that don't take Google reviews as serious as in the West. So you could find places that have 2.5 on Google and are amazing places. So it's not like in the West, that would never be the case. If it's 2.5, it's going to be shit for sure. So, but this place had like 4.9, you know, like it was like, you know, like if it has this kind of, it should be good. We walk into this place, like a super beautiful, very minimalistic decorated bar with this old man that wouldn't speak English, but he would use this translator app where he would talk to the app and the app would talk to us in English. And I told like, yeah, whatever, whiskey sour. And he told me, no, you want to have the special gin tonic. And I was like, okay, give me the special gin tonic. Then I started shooting and the guy was, no videos, only photos. And I was like, okay. So I took some pictures. It was the best gin tonic I've had in my life, dude. Like this guy comes, first of all, like the glass looked like a paper cup, you know, like super thin. And he says, it's ceramic. The gin was inside there, okay? And then he has like another extra glass full of ice. And he would take this half limes, right? Like, but completely empty. And he would put them like on the other way around. So you had the green peel on the inside, right? So you had like a mini bowl, which was actually like a lime half, right? And he would put that on top of the ice and the second glass. And he would say, you pour from this ceramic glass into the bowl and you drink from the lime bowl. Okay. And then you do like that. And I was like, okay. So I start drinking. Incredible. Then the guy start bringing out some snacks, like a mini burrata, like a dime sized burrata in soy sauce. Then a piece of ham with some drums of coffee oil. Like I've heard like before, like this combination of coffee oil and coffee and ham, but I never had it before. And I had it. It was really impressive. So like there were like this little snack, these little things. And then he said like, yeah, I have this is my boss. And he shows a picture and there's this like super vintage kind of style of chef, like from the 70s. It reminded me a lot of countries in München, you know, like that kind of vibe. But Japanese, and yeah, he has two Michelin stars. The name of the place is Kahala. A famous chef from a place called El Bulli was there last week. He really liked it.
Wow.
Yeah, and I would love to go to that place. They told me, yeah, but it's 3 months in advance to book. And I was like, but I found so interesting the snacks they had around here that I was like, oh man, I really need to try that place. So then it was, dude, like around 40 euros per cocktail. I'm so glad we only had, we only had one, unfortunately. I mean, I was like, wow, this is the most expensive drink I've ever paid in my life. But I wasn't like angry or anything because the whole experience, the whole thing, even though it was just half an hour, I think it was worth it, to be honest. I say I was really happy about having gone to that place, discovering this chef, you know, this whole thing. I was like, oh, wow. And then we went to this kushikatsu place, Oshiage 010, one of the highlights. And there I had one of the top bites of the trip, which was a motherfucking unagi burger with blue cheese. Dude, it was
what the fuck? Jesus. What the hell?
It was like, oh, what is this, please?
That's insane.
Incredible, man. Incredible.
Wow.
So that was one of the top bites. Another of the top bites was this baby shibrim nigiri at this second sushi place. Then also, I went to Chenkenichi's restaurant in Tokyo. Unfortunately, he passed away last year, but the restaurant is still open. So, and I one of the top bites there was I have this king crab soup with shark fin.
Shark fin, yeah.
Shark fin, exactly. So I'm like all this texture, this thing, and then on the bottom I have this kind of like a tofu, and I'm like, oh, this strange tofu. Like, what is it? Why is this so rich? And then I look at the menu. It was a foie gras pudding. And I remember from Iron Chef, this guy using foie gras for Chinese cuisine, which I think is so interesting. You know,
it's really innovative, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, duck, you know, like it's part of Chinese cuisine and this is just part of a duck.
No, 100%. Yeah.
But that was also one of the top bites. There were too many, man. I also have like a day trip to Kakegawa, which was like a 1.5 hours from Tokyo in a Shinkansen. My friend Barry O'Neill organized a visit to the Muto brothers, who have a restaurant there that specializes only in fugu. So it was like a whole kind of kaiseki menu, fugu, in this beautiful place, like with a private room with views to this beautiful garden and a lake. And these guys, the Muto brothers, they have this podcast in Japanese called Tabemono Radio. These are like really erudites about Japanese food history. So unfortunately, they don't speak English, but I was able to record everything on audio, so I will have it translated. But he started giving this cathedra about fugu, you know, like they started talking that it started being consumed 10,000 years ago, that samurais weren't allowed to eat it, like, man, like story and story and story about. And then we had like first sashimi, then fried, nose to tail, all of the pieces of the fish, like the shirako, which, by the way, one of the big revelations on my trip, I never had shirako before. I don't understand why this is not consumed in the West. Shabu shabu, I mean, all the possible ways you could have fugu, we had it. So
you want to explain to listeners what shirako is?
It's like fish male genitalia, right? Like fish sperm, or like, yeah. So, and the texture is like very creamy. Also, one of the top bites was in the first sushi place I went with Kevin. I think Aging Korobu is the Instagram account, because they specialize on aging fish. And it was kind of like a creamy rice, risotto-like thing with shirako in the middle. And that was like, bam. I had shirako like at least 6-7 times, and completely different ways. And for me, that was also one of the top bites, that creamy rice with shirako.
Nice.
Yeah, the texture is the thing. It's this creamy thing, like very, very nice.
That's it for this week's episode of Potluck Food Talks. If you like what we're doing, make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. You can also find us on Instagram and TikTok as Potluck Food Talks. The show airs every Monday.